Ooh, yeah, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast. Check it out at rockpaperpodcast.com. Yeah, dig it!
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Excited to welcome Music Record Shop on sponsoring the Rock Paper Podcast. Go down and check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. Official store hours are Tuesday through Sunday, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. They do a new music happy hour every Friday. Go down and get yourself some new music. They've got a great local selection. They have also a CD, vinyl, and some tapes. So go pick up some new music. Support local. MusicRecordShop.com.
Hey, this is Miss Molly Sims, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Can't you see that I need to get out of this small town? You got years on me. But age never seems to mean too much to me. I've been lonely. It's so hard to connect when you're broken. And I built these walls, and they ain't coming down one day. And I've learned so much. I wish that he could see who I am now. They say I care because a writer feels things so deeply, but I'm not sure. I hardly take a pen to paper, and I spend my days. With my time and I feel like I might just disappear. I don't need true love to mend my soul, and I can live my life and make it whole. And I don't need true love to mend my broken soul. Where I stay, I got a beautiful place on the south side, and it's far away from the dingy town where you spend your days. And I stay away from every remnant of the past now. And it's all boxed up, it's buried in the ground, or it's burned to dust. And after all this time, I can look ahead and you won't come to mind. And though I'll never know, it doesn't matter now, cause I can finally let go. But I'll still spend my days with my time, and I feel like I might just disappear. I don't need to mend my soul, and I can live my life and make it whole. And I don't need true love to mend my broken soul.
What's going on, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode 106. Hanging out with Miss Molly Sims. Welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody.
Thanks for we're hanging out down here at Molly's home. She was nice enough to let me come hang out, so thanks for having me over.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, this is also the where you shot the music video, right?
It is, right here in this living room.
Right here.
So I designed the set. We moved this couch out of the room, and my good friend Brandon Sloan, he's got a company called Dancing Shoes Productions. And we've known each other since probably 8th grade, but he has self-taught with video. He's become, you know, very prominent on the scene with his cinematography. He's worked with Lo-Fi Cherokee, with Bill Streeter. He's made music videos for Prince E, who's blowing up all over the internet, and traveling the country, traveling the world with that. But Brandon did this video for me, and basically I designed the set, all my records, everything, stop motion, most of it,
right,
and then mixed with real cinematography. But we had a blast doing it. Probably took 4 hours, you know, and then he did maybe 8 hours of editing. And
yeah.
Yeah, but he's making one with Al Holiday now.
Oh, right.
And cool. I just saw the proof for it. It looks killer. Theirs has a little more of a plot, a little more action-packed, kind of Reservoir Dogs. Okay. They're shooting people. There's fake blood involved. It's pretty killer. Nice. You know?
Yeah, I was really really liked what you did with the video, you know, the idea of it and the stop motion, like you said, and the fact that you had all your records scattered all over the floor. And
right. When you start something like that, you don't really have like a plot. He's like, "What do you want this to be?" You know, it's like, well, I guess a day in the life, you know, sort of thing. So, you know, that's why we had me writing and playing guitar and all that. It's like, there's really no plot, just to make it look visually stimulating, because I'm all about aesthetics, you know.
Right. Yeah. So that's Can't You See? Is that your that's your first?
I believe that's track one, I think, on the record. Yeah. So yeah, that's the first single. And I told Brandon I'd like to do a couple more videos. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So we'll be looking into that soon.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know some people kind of gotten away from it a little bit. You know,
like releasing singles.
No, making videos and things.
Right.
You know,
right.
It just doesn't, like, you know. Obviously, when MTV was still, you know, playing music videos, mm-hmm. like, they were the thing to, you know, everybody had to have videos out and stuff, but, like, it seems like it's kind of gotten away from it a little bit, like, it's kind of, you know, more people are just getting the CDs out and playing shows and things, but I feel like the video is a great tool to, you know, it's so easy to, especially with, you know, YouTube and things where...
Right. It's easier in this day and age, easier than ever to make a record and to make a video. You know, and us in the St. Louis music scene, we know so many people that are talented in so many different aspects, and a lot of us know people who make awesome videos. I just saw a video the other day promoting a show, which I thought was brilliant. It's like, sure, you can hang flyers, you can go talk to people, you can beat the streets, but really, to make a cool video like that, you know, it's two sides of a coin. It's like, well, that video is no good after that show in some ways, because it's only for, like, you know, that one date, but at the same time, it was like... really a brilliant marketing tactic, you know?
Yeah, and especially if you have, you know, the equipment and things, and you know what you're doing, you could probably knock that out in an hour or whatever. You know, it's not like it probably didn't take a whole lot of time to put together.
Depends on how elaborate it is. Their video was pretty elaborate, the one I saw. I think it was for Bucko Toby, which I've never heard the band, but that's the thing, is like, a great video does make you want to, like, what's this band about?
Yeah,
you know, I'm going to go check them out. So I guess that's the goal, is like, to bring back the single, which I guess is another thing that I feel like people have gotten away from, is like, you know, with the major labels and the major artists, I feel like, you know, track one, two, and three, those in that order end up being the singles.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to track my album in that way. Like, when I was choosing the songs, the first 3 to 4 songs on the record are, like, the ones I think are the best, you know?
Oh, okay.
Because some people don't get beyond that point when they're listening, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because... I liked a lot of the songs later in the album. So.
Really? Really?
Yeah, so...
Well, two of them had been recorded previously on the Bible Belt Sinners record, Empty Bottles and Goodbye St. Louis.
Yeah.
But we reimagined them. It's a totally different lineup, you know. So I've got Jamie Almond on bass guitar. He plays stand-up bass on one of the tracks, I believe. Make Me Believe, that's the last track on the record.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Zach Gibbons is on drums. He also engineered the project, co-produced it with me. He's in Cave of Swords and Old Capitol Square Dance Club.
Right.
I think his studio, you were talking about Brother Lee when we first met up here tonight. I think his studio is really going to be a place where lots of great musicians are going to start to go record. His studio is called Loud House Studios.
Okay.
And Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals, you know, ended up going to record there as well. And I think Cara Louise is talking about going there. And I think that, you know, as time goes on, we're going to see a lot more people going to Loud House Studios.
Yeah.
He just started working at I think he got a job at Nelly Institute. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that yet. But he went to school there. You know, he's really, really good at what he does, you know. And so to have somebody who plays drums, engineers the record, and co-produces it, like, definitely a man of many talents. And it's interesting, too, because he also has this hardwood floor, 1920s, maybe turn of the century, you know, beautiful old apartment. And we recorded there. That's where it was all done. It was tracked live, you know, overdubs for vocals, overdubs for Al Holiday plays keys on the record. And then Zach Anderson from Old Capitol Square Dance Club, he plays guitar on a couple songs.
Very cool.
So,
I recorded with Cave of Swords, but Zach wasn't able to make it that night. But yeah, I saw him play previously with the Leopard and stuff.
When he was
playing there. And, But yeah, and I think he runs sound at Demo too, right?
Yeah, he runs sound all over. He's a busy man.
Yeah, he's a...
And I've known him for a long time too, because he's from Belleville, Illinois.
Okay.
And so we used to see each other around at different shows and stuff. And
were you, so I guess we'll go back a little bit, but you were, born in, Edwardsville or something like that?
I grew up on a dead-end circle drive, way out in the country, middle of nowhere, 30 minutes from any town, you know, so.
Yeah, same here. I grew up Wentzville area, 40 miles or so west of St. Louis, and now it's pretty big, you know, rural or, you know, suburbia kind of area. But yeah, when I was growing up, it was a kind of a one street town and kind of thing. And but yeah, it's crazy to watch it grow and
right. Well, I'm from Edwardsville. You know, basically, it's Edwardsville is the town I'm from.
Yeah.
So, first stage I ever played on was at the Stagger Inn. Now it's cool because I get to go back there and do gigs there. Bible Belt Sinners, my other band, just opened for Dead Soldiers there. We opened for the Hoot and Hollers there. So it's kind of cool to go back and be playing these different shows there, because that was the first stage I ever played on. I think I was 16, and my dad said to me, like, it was open mic, and he's like, I'll give you $50 if you go up there. I'm like, okay, so I did it. And that's what it took to encourage me, because before that, I'm like, oh, no, I'm too nervous, you know.
What'd you sing?
Oh, geez, I really don't remember, but at that time, I can tell you that I was performing. What's funny is the woman who does the booking there now, her name's Janet Calvert. And she always tells people, oh, I've seen Molly come up and seen her blossom. And she always performed Fiona Apple. That's what she remembers about me, is that I was doing Criminal by Fiona Apple.
Right.
I'm always like, God, you have to tell people that? Can you tell them instead that I used to do Woody Guthrie, because I did? Can you tell them, you know? It's like I covered all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
It wasn't just that. I'm sure there's more embarrassing things, too. I was covering Stone Temple Pilots. And there was a guy who came there every week and covered Pearl Jam. He only played Pearl Jam. It was quite the scene. I actually re-met my kindergarten teacher at Stagger Inn one night. We were sitting at this table with some friends, and I think we smoked some pot together, and we were smoking some cigarettes, and I said, what's your name again? And she told me, and I'm like, holy shit, you were my kindergarten teacher. You know, how far out?
Yeah. I kind of get some of that every now and then. I run into I work back at the... I was working at the school that I went to school at, and a lot of the teachers are still there, so it's kind of weird to go from student to co-worker with a lot of them. But yeah, it's and then, of course, you know, you go hang out on a Friday night or whatever.
Right,
with them
to
afterwards.
Reconnect and, like, party with your kindergarten teacher, that's pretty far out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's pretty wild sometimes. But it's cool, like, in the same sense, that the fact that, you know, that you can... You know, you can realize that they're just regular people, you know.
Right. Well, I like the Stagger Inn because, to me, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been there.
I haven't, no.
But the bar is, like, stuck in the 70s. I mean, all original wood fixtures. The hallway is, like, you know, wallpapered with all these pictures. The stage is, like, black and white checkered. You know, there's taxidermy deer heads on the wall, you know.
Right.
But, lots of greats have played there. Arlo Guthrie's played there. Boss Skaggs used to play there. I mean, it was really, like, the spot for many, many years. And I have a lot of history there. Like, my great-grandfather used to do heating and cooling there. And so my mom, even as a little girl, would go drink Shirley Temple's at the bar. And, you know, so it's just kind of a cool space for me. It's, like, where I came up, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then from that point, I feel like my next cutting my teeth kind of thing when I was really young was... I graduated high school early, and I moved to Houston, Texas. And then when I got there, my aunt lived there at the time. And she helped me get out and meet all these great musicians at different bars, and I did blues jams. And that is terrifying at age, I think I was, you know, 18 years old, and it's like, okay, get up here and tell them what the key's in. You got to set the beat, tell the drummer what the feel is, and play with these cats you've never played with before in your life.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really something that changed me a lot and really helped me grow as a musician. That was, you know, step two in that department of, like, performing live, you know, before I ever had a band, you know.
Yeah.
And just go up there with standard blues songs and go, okay, this one's called Rock Me Baby. It's in D. It's a 1-4-5, and it's a shuffle beat or whatever, you know.
Right on. I love me some blues. That's our... as more and more, especially, you know, being in this town, there's so much great blues. You know, I find myself hanging out at Beale and Oyster Bar and BB's and stuff, and, like, every weekend almost.
Right. There are a lot of people who are trying to bring back the idea that St. Louis, you know, is one of the homes of the blues, and I feel like it's underappreciated, and there are a lot of people touting that message and trying to get that word out there, and I think that word will be spread immensely whenever the National Blues Museum opens.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, supposed to happen this year. Yeah. I donated a piece to it. It was a 78 of one of the first blues songs ever recorded by Mamie Smith. It was called Crazy Blues on OK Records. And I found it for 25 cents somewhere in, like, Kansas at an antique mall in a dusty old bin of records. And it was in poor condition. It's one of those kind of so bad of condition that you know, you only buy it because to prove the record exists sort of thing. You know what I mean? Right. It is a rare record. In good shape, worth about $100, you know. But anyway, wouldn't hardly play, so I donated it for a display case, you know.
Yeah.
So that should be in the National Blues Museum, which is pretty cool to be able to say.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully it does well, and of course, you know, be another tourist attraction for the town, and keep bringing more revenue in.
Kevin Belford, who did a lot of those paintings at BB's and stuff. He wrote a book, I don't know, maybe 5-7 years ago that was called Devil at the Confluence. And a lot of his beautiful illustrations are in it, but also it really just tells the story that he highly researched of all the people who came from St. Louis who, you know, pretty much he feels like the blues came from St. Louis. And so he's telling that story, you know.
Yeah.
So, it's unfortunate that in St. Louis we tear down so many of the historic buildings that, you know, tell that story. But
I was just talking the other night with somebody about which is I never got to go, but I obviously hear all the stories, but like stuff like Mississippi Nights and things, and how, like, you know, now it's a parking lot and things, and
right
and stuff like that, like how just I mean, I know it's different, but just the fact that a lot of people have tons of great memories of going to Mississippi Nights, and then now it's no longer there. It's
crazy. Right. I think there's a lot of places like that. Right. I think that as we go forward, we should focus on keeping that stuff around, which is like, as you and I were talking about as we first arrived, about KDHX and making sure that they stay around and how important and integral they are to our community, you know?
Yeah, actually, speaking of them, it's I read online that it's National Radio Day, so...
Well, hell yeah.
So I figured it'd be a pretty appropriate day to talk about some KDHX.
I just joined as a member today for the first time. So $10 a month level, you know, just do my part, make sure it stays around. It's been like 30 years or something that they've been around. And, you know, some of the people I know have been doing it since nearly the beginning. I know Steve Pick, who I work with at Euclid Records, has been, you know, part of it for a very long time.
Oh, very cool.
With his show Sound Salvation. So, yeah, I've always been grateful to, I mean, as musicians, we have to be, you know, involved with KDHX because they help promote so many different musicians and play our songs on the radio. And when Freddie Friction had his show, he'd play my songs, and Grease's Lunchbox plays Bible Belt Sinners, and Chris Ward's show plays Miss Molly Sims, and Cat Pick, Emotional Rescue, and Bobby Sweet, and all those guys.
Yeah.
Darren Snow, too. And
it's, you know, it's definitely a fixture of St. Louis music and independent music, giving people a chance to be heard on the radio that might not always have the opportunity. So that's very cool.
I'm going to be going on Chris Ward's show on August 31st. His show starts, I believe, at 11 p.m.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Yeah.
Chris is he's a wild man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
On the way here, I believe I was listening to... He was sitting in on someone else's show.
Okay.
Yeah, he was, like, playing Pac-Man in the background or something, shouting things.
Yeah, we sat in a Taco Bell a while back and recorded an episode together, and we ate those Captain Crunch treats.
Is that cinnamon,
delights.
Whatever those are?
Well, they have the Cinnabon ones, but these are Captain Crunch, like a similar little donut ball things covered in Captain Crunch dust, and
holy cow.
They weren't very good, it was funny though. It was a good time.
That same day that I'll be on his show, that morning I'm gonna do Fox 2 again. This will be like my fifth time maybe on that show. And so we'll be promoting the record. It'll be me, and what's interesting is, as I told you before you arrived today, my band is never changing lineup I don't wish it to be that way. It just sort of is at this current moment. So, but the good thing about that is being able to pull in really talented people from different directions and have them work with me. So Jeremy Reedy from Old Souls Revival is playing my CD release party, and he's also been rehearsing with me, and he'll be on the Fox 2 morning show with me on August 31st, as well as Jamie Almond, who played bass on the record and is also playing the CD release party. So nice. Three piece will be on the news. Now that same lineup will be with me October 7th. We're playing after Father John Misty at the Halo Bar.
Yeah, I just read that today.
Yeah, so doing my research. For the CD release party, I'll actually have a five-piece band, so that will include Al Holiday as well, and Zach Anderson, who also played on the record. So
nice, yeah. So September 4th mm-hmm. at Off-Broadway, you can come see Miss Molly Sims at the CD release show. It's going to be $10 at 8 p.m. with Tortuga and The Feed.
Right, and, so do you know those bands?
Yeah, I don't know Tortuga yet. I know The Feed.
Okay.
I know Jordan and Ben. And
so I would say that Tortuga, in my opinion, is what I would call a local supergroup because it is a lot of members of the Big Muddy Records roster. Ryan Koenig, or however you say his name, and Mike Leahy from he was in Seven Shot Screamers. He also does Clownvis. Jenny Rokes is a background singer for that project. Matt Wilson, Rum Drum Ramblers, is in the group. So yeah, I've only seen them once so far. They call themselves Dark Americana.
Yeah.
They have a really, actually speaking of music videos, they have a really killer music video that's out there as well.
All right,
yeah,
go check it out.
So I think the lineup that night is going to go Tortuga, and then I'm going to sandwich myself right in the middle, and then have The Feed close out the night.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know, the middle slot's kind of a prime slot. Gives people time to get there, but then they're not too drunk to enjoy the show.
Yeah. All right.
And then I can have some drinks and hang out and watch the band I love. You
know? Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, I know typically a lot of these shows, like, you know, they always go on last. They consider that like the headliner spot or whatever, but it's like it's just a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm here as a fan to enjoy these.
Right. Yeah. I've always felt like, you know, screw headlining a show. I feel like the middle slot is pretty much the prime slot of any show.
Yeah.
I
was telling you off mic a little bit about this party I threw for my 1 year, and I had my friends Jackson Howard and Drew Lance play, and they played last after Steve Ewing, and they were like, you know, that was their thing. Like, they're like, you sure you want us going on after Steve? And I was like, it's not, you know, it's not a headliner spot or anything or whatever. It's just, we're just all hanging out, having fun. So
it
doesn't, you know, in order of set time doesn't matter at all. Just
totally.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's all, just putting on a good show and having fun. So the album, One Way Ticket, is this your second or your third?
That'll be my second solo album, but altogether with the two bands, it'll be the fourth record that I've put out since 2012, I believe.
Right.
So four records, 3 years. It's pretty decent
run.
Yeah,
that's a lot of writing.
Yeah. All with a full-time job.
Right, yeah. yeah, I feel like that too. I mean, I'm not writing. That's the nice thing about this show, is doing, you know, it's not a lot of work necessarily. You know, it's a lot of
you get to meet a lot of interesting people, and, you know.
But I do this,
and
I go to all kinds of shows, and I work full time. I have two jobs, and, like, you know, just running around all the time. But it keeps me out of trouble, I say.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You sent me a copy of the record, and I gave it a listen, and I really liked it.
What was the standout track to you? Because you said later in the record, what really
so
you.
And this sucks. So I'm I just recently, you know, just started becoming familiar with Bible Belt Centers and yourself. So which has happened a lot more frequently lately. I was kind of telling you about being able to meet Cree Ryder and talk about Cree Ryder Family Band with him, and, like, but not, you know, a lot of people I've been meeting for the first time on the mic more and more as I've been.
That's such an interesting thing, too. I mean, I feel like I've met so many people. I'll be thrown on stage with them at some point. You know, maybe you're just at a jam and they're on stage with you. Maybe you're sitting in with your friend's band and they're there. I mean, I met my friend Eric McSpadden, who played on my last record.
Yeah.
Amazing harmonica player. I met him on the stage at Beale on Broadway because we opened for, I think that night it was Kim Massey we opened for. And Bud from Beale on Broadway that owns that place, he put us together. He's like, all right, you're playing with these guys, you know, get on stage and shout out the keys or whatever. And yeah, we shook hands and started up the show, you know.
Nice.
Some of the best friendships are formed that way, you know.
Yeah, I'm having a great time meeting people. And but yeah, it's like I kind of had a grasp of what St. Louis music was, but it's as more and more I get to doing this show, it's been networking out farther and farther, and I'm getting to meet all sorts of people and discover new music all the time, so...
I want to see more people teaming up in different aspects, like, you know, those people who make those videos and those people who do the podcasts and the musicians and, you know, like, for example, you know, Loft Sessions. I don't know if you've heard of those guys. I did one with Bible Belt Sinners. Al Holiday just did one with Loft Sessions. Now, the guy who made my music video, Brandon Sloan, Dancing Shoes Productions, he's now working with Loft Sessions, helping them film, helping them edit. So he's also somebody who's involved with that, but I'd love to see more cross networking in those ways. Like, I bet there's all kinds of ways we could team up and do different.
Yeah, definitely. I know, it's still like in the infancy, but, my buddy's got a project and, it's not necessarily, you know, he's in the rock community. Like, you know, he works at Pops and things and a lot, plays in Fivefold, which is a pretty big rock band out of town. St. Louis, but he's got a project they're starting up. He's trying to do is called We Are United, and that's essentially what he's trying to do is bring, you know, he wants to be sort of a connection between the bands and the, you know, people with, you know, that make stickers and t-shirts.
Well, I mean, if people were cross-promoting, they could get so much more done. Like, for example, if you did a podcast right before a Loft Session for the band that was going to do the Loft Session, and then you both released at the same time. You released the Loft Session with your podcast, and they released your podcast with the Loft Session.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many brilliant ways that we could all work together, and I think we need to focus on building community and and doing that, for sure.
Yeah. I've started a music record shop. Down in Manchester sponsors the show, and we've booked our first showcase there.
Very cool.
So announced today, and so October 3rd to 4th, I'll have Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals and Delta Soul Revival, and the two of them are going to play 2 to 4 and
cool
live in store. So yeah, I'm trying to. That's a little different, but in the same sense, it's, you know, the record store, and they're doing a lot to support local, and I'm bringing some local music in there, and, you know, hopefully we can all partner up and keep working together.
Totally, totally. Currently, I'm working at Euclid Records, so we also do different in-stores and stuff as well. And
that's a great way to keep everybody connected. And like
And if there's anybody out there who has local records that they want to consign, they're welcome to bring them on into Euclid and get them on the shelves.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and we'll throw it out on our Facebook and mention that it's there. And that's one of the funny things is so many people make a record, and once the record is made, they don't work on getting it out there to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, even if they get it out there to be sold, they don't keep checking on it to make sure that it's okay. You know, you're supposed to check every 3 months or whatever, and a lot of people don't. And so what happens is it becomes dead product, you know. And we need to, as artists, think about these things because it is hard. It's like you spread yourself thin being your own promoter, your own marketer, your own, you know, you're the writer, you're the musician, you're the band leader, you're the booker, you're the, you're everything for yourself when you're an indie level musician. And it's easy to lose sight of the fact that, like, okay, you wrote the songs, you recorded the record, you know, you got it mixed, you got it mastered, you had the release party, and then the next step after that, you have to make sure that it gets distributed, that it gets sold, that, you know, it's not just sitting there dead product somewhere or in your living room in a box or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully that the people maybe hear this and remind them that they need to go
check on their consignment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, we kind of went off topic there a bit, but I was, which is perfectly fine. It's what's fun about doing this show is, but like what I was, you asked me about the songs that stuck out to me. And I really liked Piss Away the Years. Which is what, three? Track three?
Yep. So that's within my first top four or whatever. Right.
And then I liked, which I didn't know, you said was previously done on with Bible Belt Sinners, but was Goodbye St. Louis and Empty Bottle. So mm-hmm. I liked those two a lot too.
I mean, they're all tunes. They're both tunes that I wrote, mm-hmm. But they were recorded previously and in a different fashion too. I mean, they were sped up and they were recorded live one take basically. So this is a little bit more finessed, a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember I did notice that empty bottles though, that because I saw the lo-fi video.
Bible Belt Sinners, totally.
2013, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that. I did realize that one was Bible Belt,
For sure. I guess my intention was, I've had so many people ask me at my solo shows, do you have that song on a CD?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I'm only selling my solo stuff or whatever. And it's like, oh, I would like to have that on my own record, you know, produced the way that I want to produce it, not produced as the Bible Belt Sinners, where we tend to just cut a live record, play it live, play it fast, play it loud, get it done. You know, I wanted to take time and produce it the way that I envisioned it.
Yeah.
You
know? Now, when you're like writing, do you write with this is more of a solo thing, or do you write just and try to figure out how you can work it for the band and for you, or how?
You know what's weird is I used to worry about that, but it's usually pretty obvious.
Yeah.
As soon as the song is done, you're kind of like, oh, this one's for me. Because part of the reason being that, like, when you write for a band, we do a lot of co-writing with Bible Belt Sinners.
Yeah.
But also, when you're writing for a band, you have to write with everyone's intention in mind of what, you know, you want to be perceived as or what you want to put out there in the universe, and not just what you feel. Now, when you're writing your solo music, it's whatever the hell you want to do. And a lot of times, my stuff's a little more sappy than anything that Bible Belt Sinners want to put out there. I mean, when you're in a band with three guys, you don't want to, like, have your next single be a song about love or something necessarily, unless it's, like, got a little darker side to it, like Lovesick and Blind, which is a song I wrote for Bible Belt Sinners that was on the Lytle compilation. I know they're really hardcore promoting that album right now. One of the guys from, or maybe two of the guys from Brotherly and the Leather Jackals, their old band is on the Lytle compilation, which that's Last in the American League.
Yeah.
And Chuck Critterden, I think is how you say his name, he put together this compilation. And it's a mixture of visual artists from St. Louis working with, you know, musicians, and then putting together, like, basically, like, they paired us up with an artist, the artist created a piece to go with the song that's going to be on the compilation, and then there's a book that comes with the LP, and each page has a beautiful illustration that coincides with the tune on the record.
Yeah. Actually, I just got my copy yesterday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I noticed, I wanted to get one. I backed it on the Kickstarter, which fell through.
Yeah. They fell short of their goal, but I thought it was really cool that he put it out anyway.
Yeah. So I got the emails that it failed or didn't happen, and then I kind of spaced and forgot about it, and then I noticed it. I got a notification thing or whatever that they dropped it down to $20, and I was like, man, I gotta
hear that, people, get your copy 20. Now, it's on sale, motherfuckers. Yeah. Can you say that on the radio?
Oh, you can say whatever. Yeah.
fuck. FCC violation.
Yeah. $20 for a beautiful double LP vinyl.
Mm-hmm. With the art book as well.
So, that's a great deal.
Mm-hmm. First time I got to hear myself on a vinyl record, for sure.
That's awesome.
I don't have the money to put it out myself, so it's nice to be included.
Right. I think John Venegoni on, who plays with The Educated Guests, and they're on there as well, and I had him on the show a while back, and we talked about that, and I believe his girlfriend Lita does a lot of
part of the project as well. Yeah, she's a big part of the marketing and everything.
Yeah.
Speaking of compilations that I'm on, I'm also on one called 14 in 14, which the Blues Society put out last year. And it's a compilation of different blues artists from the city. Now, blues is pretty much the genre that I started in when I first came here. Mm-hmm. So it's one of my earlier cuts called Usual Suspects with that harmonica player, Eric McSpadden.
Yeah.
Also, I was on lots of, two compilations for the Whiskey War Festival for the two consecutive years that I played that festival. And I wanted to mention that because I have a lot of friends that are playing there on Saturday. I guess we're not going to make it for that, are we? Yeah, you said Tuesday. So.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully a lot of you went to the Whiskey War Festival and, you know, definitely enjoyed yourself. I know I'll be there.
Yeah. I've been promoting it for my Manus brothers. Been on the show. And like I mentioned, Brother Lee will be there as well.
Now, those guys work really hard to put up that festival on every year, so I will say that even though this will come out after the festival's over, it will happen again the next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, keep your eye out for that because there's always a great lineup and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Totally grassroots, you know, those guys just run it together. And
yeah, those guys are always hustling. They're on tour playing all the time, and then they come home and they play all the time. And
right, well, David Manus, he played at my last CD release party in 2012 at the Crack Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was part of the band for that evening. And he was on Fox 2 with me, actually, that year. Yeah. I think that was the year I met him.
Yeah. Very cool. Speaking of Bible Belt Centers and Brother Lee, also, you guys are doing a show together August 29th with Blackwater 64.
Who's also on the Lytle compilation, Full Circle.
Yeah. And they'll be at Foam.
Coffee and beer at Jefferson and Cherokee.
Yeah, it's a neat little place. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot more now that Mick is running it, you know. Before, I probably wouldn't have played there. Not because of anything in particular, but I feel like now he's promoting it a lot better. There's a lot more local musicians playing there. It's built a little bit up more into more of a scene.
Yeah.
You know, happy with what's going on there.
I've only been there for a comedy show.
I haven't
seen a live band play.
Actually, I saw Tortuga there.
Yeah.
So Bible Belt Centers has a new bass player, and his name's Keith Norton. He went on tour with us this past time in April. He's from Champaign. He actually runs a radio show there called Surfabilly Freakout that's on their public radio station. And he's coming in town for that show next week on the 29th. So that'll be a killer time. Keith's a lot of fun. We're really happy to have him in town for that show.
Nice, yeah. And then you guys are at Schlafly Tap Room on the 19th of September.
Yeah, that one's with The Wilderness.
The Wilderness.
Yeah.
I think I saw them play with Brother Lee down there the last time. One of the last times I saw them.
I want to say that they played at Euclid for Record Store Day. I think that's how I came across them.
Yeah.
I don't know much about them, and
me neither.
It's kind of funny. I'm ashamed to say that, but I just hear so many great things about certain bands. Like, I've never seen Blackwater 64 live, and I'm playing with them.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen The Wilderness, except for maybe at Record Store Day, which Record Store Day, I'm busting my ass. I don't see nobody.
It's
I'm just
crazy,
working the front counter. So I'm really excited about that.
Speaking of Record Store Day, I was Jim of Vintage Vinyl invited me to guest DJ down there.
Oh, cool.
Last year.
Do you do record spinning, or do you do your computer?
Well, in this particular case, I wanted, since I was invited to guest DJ because of the podcast, I wanted to showcase some talent from the show. So I made a mix CD of all my favorites from the show, and then I put some of the... I would usually have everybody, you know, hey, you're listening to Rock Your Podcast. I put some of those, drops in between as, intros in the song. And,
cool.
And then I just basically hit play on the CD and let it run. And,
right on.
For my hour or whatever I got to DJ. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it would have been fun to really spin records at Vintage Vinyl. But I also wanted to kind of cross-promote everything, so.
Yeah. You were talking about, we mentioned Cave of Swords earlier, and Zach, my drummer and engineer and co-producer, he's also in that band, and I went to Senyata's the other day, and she had a grill out, and we were just chilling, talking, and we were discussing with a couple other people about formats of releasing music, and releasing music on CD versus digital downloads versus vinyl, and I've had so many people ask me, are you going to put out a record? And it's like, I would love to, but I don't think that for an indie artist it's very cost effective. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get 500 or 1,000 made to make, you know, it worth your money. And then at that level, at that point, unless you're touring all the time, I don't know that you can sell through them, you know? So I was saying that with, you know, rock and roll and singer-songwriter, I feel like CD is a good way to go for an indie artist because your cost is so low. You can get small run pressings. You know, you can get 50 at a time for $1 something a piece, you know? I just think that that's probably the way to go. But we were discussing digital downloads, too, and there were people saying, at the grill out, saying that they have released their CD only on digital download and were successful in selling those. I'm always curious to hear how people are releasing music and what works for people.
Yeah.
Some people said that the new MacBooks don't have a disk drive.
Right.
So they want a digital download. Even if they're buying a CD, they say include a digital download. So I think at my CD release party, I'll have a stack of digital downloads, and whoever buys a CD, if they need one, they can take one. You know?
I've been noticing more and more of like where people are selling those cards for $10 or whatever it is,
I feel like I want the art too. I'm all about the CD or the vinyl. It's like, give me that physical product and then give me the digital download too.
I buy everything in vinyl that I can when available, but yeah, I love having the physical CD if at least having the physical product. And and that's what I do like about vinyl today, that a lot of times it comes with that digital download, so you don't have to worry about trying to, do
that. Was actually one of the things that I recommended to Lytle when they were first, talking about the idea and everything. I said, sure, but you better throw a digital download code in there. And they hadn't even thought about it, so good thing that they did. I feel like that's really important if you're releasing vinyl.
It's fantastic. And then you don't have to worry, also keeps... For a lot of times, like when you get like a CD for $10, and then like the vinyl will be like $15 or $20 or something, so it's really not that much more, and you get a beautiful record and all the artwork and liner notes and things, and
totally.
So I love having all that stuff, and
I feel like album art is still really, really important. Mm-hmm. To me, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm a very visual person, but I created all the art myself this time. People helped me along the way. Like, the front cover is this... Actually, if you look at the t-shirt, which is in my living room here, a t-shirt was designed by Tim Smith. TheTimSmith.com is his website. He does stuff for Jack White, Loretta Lynn, Levi's Jean Company, all kinds of people. Clownmas in town. Lola Vanella, that new sticker on the outside of her building was done by him. But the image itself is a vector design that he used a photograph, was inspired by the photograph that Brandon Sloan actually took, the guy who did my video. So the front cover of the record is actually the photograph Brandon took with kind of like this red filter over it. And then it's very classic kind of Bob Dylan-esque style record cover with the white border. And then the back is actually a high-res picture of my guitar case with some different luggage labels on there that we designed with the song titles. And so, album art is definitely important to me, and I feel like it says a lot about your record. And even the font that you use says something about the genre, to where the person picks it up and says, what kind of music should I expect from, when you look at the front of a record, what kind of music can I expect if I didn't know who this was,
Sure. Yeah, I love reading, the liner notes and all that stuff, too, and... if the lyrics are in there or all that stuff. And I've been fortunate enough to be mentioned in some of the stuff. So it's always fun to see your name in print.
I will say, don't be offended if somebody's name is not in mine, because I'm that minimalist when it comes to that. It's like, do I need a fold-out book with the lyrics? No, I'm just going to put like a simple thing. And it basically just says, thank you to my grandparents, and then it says, and a big thanks to anyone else who helped make this record possible.
Yeah.
So you motherfuckers know who you are.
Yeah, right.
And thank you very much for all your hard work. But, some people do really extensive liner notes. I know Bruja Queen even thanked me in their liner notes. They have extensive thank yous in their liner notes. But you always forget somebody. What's funny is when I made this record at the very beginning, I started making a list of all the people I wanted to thank, and it filled up like 5 notebook pages. And eventually I'm like, I'm just going to say thanks to everybody here.
Yeah, that's a good way to keep it PC, nobody gets hurt.
You're always going to leave somebody out.
Grabbing the guitar,
You mind if I play a tune from the record?
Sure.
Okay. We move back here so I'm not blaring in that mic. Okay. I was going to do a One-Way Ticket, and I was going to tell you about this song a little bit, which is the title track on the record. When I told my buddy Zach, who recorded it, what I wanted to call the record, he kind of said, it sounds bleak. I don't know. Like, One-Way Ticket? I'm not sure, And I thought of all the different names I could call the record, and had a couple other ideas, and I just felt like, hey, I think that's it. I'm going to stick with it. To hell with everybody else, you know? But this tune, basically, I'd been listening to the Bottle Rockets a lot. They're from St. Louis. They're on Bloodshot Records.
Yeah.
I used to work for Donna Knott from Hullabaloo. Her sister's Janet Henneman, who's married to Brian Henneman from the Bottle Rockets. Actually bought this amp from Killer Vintage. Brian works there still, even though he's now on Bloodshot Records, and still plays a lot of great music in the city and all around the country. But their song, Early in the Morning, which is off of one of their first two, I can't ever remember, because they just re-released the two together in like a deluxe package, you know.
Okay.
It's their self-titled and then also their record called The Brooklyn Side. Now the song is called Early in the Morning, and basically sometimes when I'm writing a tune, I'll look at a tune I really like, and I won't steal the melody, I won't steal the chords, but I'll steal the structure. So I'll look at how they laid it out, and I'll just kind of like try to write to that and see if I can write something to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this song's a little bit repetitive in that sort of way, and eventually I came up with a bridge to kind of break it up. But which actually the bridge we came up with during rehearsal, which we only had one rehearsal before we cut the record, and it was over at Jamie Allman's house, and I kind of had an idea for a bridge, but it wasn't quite there yet, but it came together within that one rehearsal, so.
Nice.
Didn't mean to let you down. Must be something in this town. Maybe I'll quit hanging around and buy a one-way ticket. When I was younger, I was kind. Wonder what it is I'll find when I buy a one-way ticket. I've known love and I've known pain. Rather not know them again. Guess it's time to catch a train and buy a one-way ticket. I'm so good at breaking hearts, tearing such great men apart. You should have known right from the start I would buy a one-way ticket. Memories, that's all they are. Dwelling there won't get me far. I guess I'll just hop in my car and buy a one-way ticket. Maybe I'm reformed this time. I know all the fault is mine. Guess I'll use my one last dime to buy a one-way ticket. I'm so good at breaking hearts, tearing such great men apart. You should have known right from the start I would buy a one-way ticket. Memories, that's all they are. Dwelling there won't get me far. I guess I'll just hop in my car and buy a one-way ticket. I've known love and I've known pain. Rather not know them again. Guess it's time to catch a train and buy a one-way ticket. I'm so good at breaking hearts, tearing such great men apart. Shutting all right from the start. Shutting all right from the start. Shutting all right from the start. That I would buy a one-way ticket. That I would buy a one-way ticket. I was worried I was a little loud for that microphone.
Oh, I think it'll be fine. Yeah, if it sounds any mistakes, it's my fault. It sounded good to me though.
Cool.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So September 4th.
Yeah.
Off Broadway, CD release party. So come out and get yourself a copy of that song and the title track of One Way Ticket, the album.
Hell yeah. With Tortuga in the feed.
Yeah.
kind of sound
8 p.m. all ages. You can bring your kids to this one, folks.
Yeah.
$3 minor surcharge.
Sounds like a real good time. Yeah, and then we mentioned also you'll be at the Halo Bar after Father John Misty, October 7th.
Yep, about 11 p.m.
Yeah. That's cool that they're doing some of those.
For sure. You know, they've been doing those for a while. Yeah, yeah, just having bands after big bands. It's pretty cool.
Right. Yeah, it's a nice chance to... A lot of times, I mean, I don't know that you're necessarily... like Father John Misty, but there's a lot of times there's a kind of a cross connection kind of thing.
Totally,
there's
just
a little similarities. And
yeah, they wanted something high energy, and I think I can definitely deliver that. Yeah. So,
but it's nice sometimes when there are those kind of like that where you can, you know, band people kind of bleed over. And
yeah, and I think I can appeal to that audience. I mean, Father John's played with Alabama Shakes and those people. So
I was at that Fox show.
I was in the owner's back seat.
Oh,
for
very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was like maybe a week or something before the show. I get a message. I'm on the Pageant Street team, and I get a text. I was like, hey, they were like, hey, you want to go to see this Alabama Shake show still? And I'm like, for free? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, yeah, I'll go. You know, so yeah, it was a great time. So first, I saw Father John Misty, and I don't know if I really get it.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it would be... I can appeal to that audience.
Sure.
I think it's going to be like a really good show. I think there's going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah.
And that's mainly what I'm
definitely
getting at. I think a lot of people really wanted to play the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sonically, I think that the band is fantastic. I just, I don't know, there's something it didn't click for me. Like, I don't know what it is exactly.
Right.
But what to put my finger on, but like it just...
Well, even if you don't like Father John Misty, you know you
show
like the Miss Molly Sims band.
Show up around 11
o'clock.
It's
free.
Yeah.
You can't beat free.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Also in the Loop. If you want to go check out some new restaurant you've been thinking about going to, maybe go get some Soul Taco, some Mission Taco, and then head on over to the show October 7th.
Or pie. That's a good choice as well.
Yeah.
I like that. But yeah, this is
yeah, well, thanks for having
me. It's been a lot of fun, yes. So yeah, pick up.
Also, I'm redoing my website, MissMollySims.com. Check it out. The new one should be launching here pretty soon, within the next couple weeks. Chelsea Webster designed it. She's this kick-ass chick in the city who does that kind of thing.
Very
so
cool.
If you need a website, hit her up.
Yeah.
Yeah, new album, One Way Ticket, CD release party September 4th, Off-Broadway. Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate hanging out with you, and appreciate you letting me come and talk with you on the show.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
And, hell yeah.
Yeah, so pick up your copy of Lytle. Come out to Foam on the August 29th. See Brother Lee, Bible Belt Sinners, and Blackwater 64. All those things.
Cool.
It's going to be parties. All right. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
It's been fun. See ya.
See ya.
Laughter or the devil.